So I want to continue a little bit of a deeper dive into this issue of one truth versus multiple truths and try to get a little more nuanced understanding. Actually,
can you say that there are many roads that lead to the same destination?
But you can. Okay, but we have to understand what that means. In other words, I'm saying we saw, you could say many things. I just want to share a range of opinions. We had the last week, we discussed the Ritva, who said there are multiple truths, that basically there are multiple ways you can look at something, and I could say this cookie is treif, but I could look at many ways and say this cookie is not treif. And opposite things, but somehow they're both perspectives and both are true in some respect. And we saw the Ron said, no, only one truth, right? There's only one truth, but you go by the majority. We don't need the truth, right? We don't need the truth. And I share with you at the end, that's what I actually have blogged about this week, about how the philosophy impacts the ethics. That according to Ritva, the idea is you try to learn from everyone, right? You have multiple truths, you have multiple ways that, you know what, I don't own the truth, and we try to learn from other people. And the Ron is saying, even if I think you're totally wrong, but I'm a team player. I think those are the ethical perspective of both. So I want to sort of go through a little bit deeper and finish the topic today. And I think someone mentioned this. If there's only one truth, why do you need a separate opinion? Why do you need a dissenting opinion? If there's only one truth, let's say you believe in the Ron. What should you study? Let's say you follow Beis Hillel, right? You follow Beis Hillel, you believe Beis Hillel is correct. Why should we study Beis Shammai?
How do you get to the truth?
Oh, you said you need Beis Shammai in order to...
Yeah. You need to
look at both sides.
Each other. You make your argument better when you're.
How do you validate your thesis?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can't just look at one side.
Beis Hillel is correct on faith or on reasoning, and if it's on reasoning, then you want
to
hear.
So in other words, you need to right. Okay, good. So this Pesach Yidayim says good. He says Elu ve'Elu Divrei Kibchaya, Ein Pirusha D'Shneim Emes. It's not that they're both true. They're both the words of God. Leos de ein haor nikar elamitoch hachoshach. The light is only recognizable, Joe. The light is only recognizable from the darkness. You need darkness in order to find light. Nimsa dasvara hamenagedes. That's what you're all saying. Dasvara hamenagedes toel lahavin hatov hasvar hamitis beetzem. So let's say, you know, I'm a litvak theoretically. And let's say this person here is like, he's a mystical guy. So I have, you know, so he's always challenging me, right? He's always saying how I'm wrong and I don't know what I'm talking about. And there's some whatever deeper MS, whatever. So let's assume if I'm the Ritva, then I say, you know what, I own the truth and Joe owns the truth. We both own the truth. And you know, I need to learn from him. He should learn from me. Okay. But if I'm the Ron, if I would follow the rod, and I think, no, I'm a Litvak, I think he's wrong, I think his whole approach is wrong. However, when he challenges me, studying his opinion is still good, because studying the opposing opinion will help me understand my truth. That's what it means, that both opinions, Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, are the words of the living God. Ula'olam disvara achas emes, really, one opinion is true, one opinion is not true. He might think I'm totally wrong. He might be true, I'm not true. That whatever it is, but we study the opposing opinions to help sharpen my own opinion. That's what I always like. I like when people ask questions. It's a famous story, you know, with Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. You know the famous story when Reish Lakish dies? You know the famous story, right? Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, so they were contemporaries. Rav Yochanan was ahead of Reish Lakish, and the Gemara says that basically Reish Lakish dies. There's some story where Rav Yochanan felt bad, somehow caused Reish Lakish to die, and then Rav Yochanan basically, he has these other rabbis who are like debating or just who are like learning with him, and he's really upset because he says that these other rabbis, when Rav Yochanan would say something, they would find like 20 proofs for him. And he's like, you know, Reish Lakish, he would argue on me all the time. I want someone who's going to argue on me, because that helps me refine my position and get to the truth. Right? So again, either you can really say, no, there are multiple truths. That's Ritva. The Ron is going to say there's only one truth, but still value in studying the opposing view, because it helps me sharpen my own view. Okay? So now we're going to work a little bit deeper into the Ritva. The Ritva says there are multiple truths. The Ritva says there are multiple truths, but they're different. The way the Ritva learned it is that that at Sinai, God showed Moshe 49 ways to say this is forbidden, 49 ways to say this is permitted. So he's really saying that there are multiple perspectives, but they're not compatible. You can look at that and say, no, that we have different truths, and somehow they're compatible. They work together. Let me read you this Gemara, and tell me what you make of this. Okay? As you follow along, I want you to tell me after you hear it, what do you think this adds to our discussion here? See, it says in the pasuk, "Vatizna love Pilakshah." So there's a really bad story, Pilegish Begiva, right? The concubine in Giva, she was cut up, and she was raped by all these people from the tribe of Binyamin, and you know, it caused a civil war. In any case, what happened to her? His concubine went away from him, right? He sent her away. This guy sends away his concubine. What happened? Rabbi Eviyasar Amar, Zvuv Matzalo. Rabbi Eviyasar said he found a fly in the food. Just check the food, make sure. He found a fly in the food that she prepared for him. Okay? Eviyasar Amar, Nema Matzalo. He found a hair in her food. Okay, one said he found a, I don't know what's worse, fly or hair. Okay, I don't know. So that's what he got upset. Va'ashiche Rav Eviyasar le'Eliyahu. So Rav Eviyasar, he finds Eliyahu. He walks down the street and he finds Eliyahu. He says, Amar le, my ka'avi to Kadosh Baruch Hu, what's God doing now? So Amar le, Eliyahu said, Osik b'pilagish b'giva. Kadosh Baruch Hu, he's learning the sugya, the topic of b'pilagish b'giva. Okay? So umay kamar, what's God saying? Amar le, he's saying, Eviyasar b'ni kachu omer, Yodos b'ni kachu omer. So Kadosh Baruch Hu is learning the Sugya Pilei Shekiv. Presumably God knows what happened. But God is learning the Sugya Pilei Shekiv. And he's reading. He's like, well, Eviyasar said, this is what happened. And Yodos had said, this is what happened. Amar le, chas v'shalom, umi kasvei kapish b'ni. What does that mean? Well, God's deciding what happened. Like, well, if Yosef says this happened, and if Yosef says this happened, was it a fly, was it a hair? Does God not know what happened? Right? So Amar le, Elu ve'elu different kim chayim. Both opinions are the word of the living God. Zvuv matza v'lo hikbid, neima matza v'hikbid. So, what must have happened? The husband found a fly, not a big deal. He found a hair, that was a big deal. I don't know, maybe I'm the opposite. I don't know. I don't know what's worse, finding a hair, finding a fly. I don't know. But okay, who could debate that also? What's the message of this Gemara here? Like what's he trying to tell us, this Gemara?
Like you could find ways for both people to be right.
You could find that sometimes you think that when people are arguing, it's that the argument is not compatible, right? The two opinions are not compatible. Here, sometimes you see things with it, right? Sometimes you see things with different perspectives, right?
But sometimes they are not compatible.
I understand. Right. No, 100%. Right. So it depends. Right. Certain things are definitely, certain things you can say are not compatible. So here, sometimes you have multiple, right? So this, I think, is different than the Ritva. Ritva is saying, like, a point where we're saying you have two truths. You can look at something. And this usher, this is mutter, which seems to be incompatible, right? Here, the Gemara at least stands for the position that sometimes you can have multiple truths that are compatible. Just one other example. There's a Tosfos. Tosfos says, "Keman matzlinan zayom tchilas masacha." Okay. So Rosh Hashanah. Right, what do we say in Rosh Hashanah? Don't we say that in Rosh Hashanah zayom? Do you down Rosh Hashanah Musaf? What do you down, Joe? You have Yom Kippur? What do you do? Shacharis? So we say in Musaf, remember? Then we say, Zeh Yom Tchilas Masecha. We say that Rosh Hashanah is the day of when this is the beginning of your handiwork. This is when man was created. Is that true? Does everyone agree that man was created in Rosh Hashanah?
It's
Machlokas. So we're taking a position. So he says the following, Umashi Yasad, Rabbi Elazar Kalir, Begeshem. Apparently, the Shmini Atzeres, to Rabbi Eliezer, Dabar B'Tishrei Divrei Olam. So apparently, in Tefillas Geshem, Rabbi Elazar Kalir, when he wrote Tfilas Geshem, I think there it says somewhere that God creates the world in Tishrei. Uvishal Pesach, Yosek Rav Yeshua. So apparently Rabbi Elazar Kalir wrote two different prayers, he composed two different prayers. And one prayer he said, when was the world created? Tishrei. The other place he said, when was the world created? Nisan. So Amar Rabbeinu Tam, Elu ve'elu, Divrei Elokim Chayim. Both opinions are the words of God, the living God. Ika lemeimar, you can say what? Tishrei Allah b'machshava libros. L'divrei ad nisan. What happened? Tishrei, God thought to create man, but he wasn't created till Nisan. Okay? Again, this is another example, of course, where what? You have two different opinions, and they seem to be, is that, it's not really multiple truths, but it's really one truth, but we try to find ways to make them compatible. Okay? Now, will that apply to everything? Right? Maybe not. I don't think you tie it to everything, right? A gadata might be easier, right? There are certain facts that are not. Now, Rav Kook has an extreme position of this. Like, Rav Kook is like he takes this to such an extreme. Okay? And I this is like a tshuva of Kook. In Oros HaKodesh, Volume 1, Number 11. He says the following. He said, there's a rabbi, who was like an enlightened rabbi in the 19th century, who wrote to Rav Kook, how can you have that there's unity in opposites? Okay? Right? Because you're here, I'm going to say, right? What is it called? Yisrael Varaisa Kutcha Barichu, right? So everything is one. God is one, the Torah is one, everything. There's like, Rav Kook's very into unity of everything, right? There's like a concept in Zohar of Yichud, of unity. But he goes very extreme in this. Your most recent letter is presently before me. I'm amazed that your honor responded to what I wrote about the unity of opposites with the known fact that it is impossible for there to be two opposites in one subject. In other words, the person who wrote this letter said, you can't have two opposites that are unified. It doesn't make sense. Two opposites are opposites. Usser is usser, mutter is mutter. They can't be the same. I wondered if this is what was necessary. The main innovation is that from the aspect of higher thought, which scrutinized the profundity of things, there are no opposites reality. In reality, there's nothing that's opposite. And whenever there are opposites, there is also some hidden condition that when it becomes explicit, will show that the two propositions that appeared in an oppositional form and expression are constructed out of different aspects of a single proposition. What's he saying here? What's he saying in this long sentence? What's he saying here?
Maybe that we don't necessarily understand how they're the same, but eventually it'll come out that they're not really opposites.
Right. That he says, now obviously there's certain, like the Yossi point, there's certain historical facts. You know, this happened on this day or this day. But in terms of, like, we have machloksim, you have certain debates, and people think that they can't be reconciled. So sometimes even to usser mutter, there's, if you add one piece, then you could say they're all one. Thus, it's not that by learning the other position, then you clarify your own position. It's actually that there's some common ground. Let me try to say they all come from one place. Yeah, but there's something that we're missing. Thus, through both propositions together, we see two aspects of a single proposition, and thus there are no absolute opposites. Regarding the matter at hand that is pertaining to the condition of thought, this rule extends to all spiritual ideas. And true opposition does not exist except regarding that which pertains to historical facts that we understood through teachings. Other than historical facts, any spiritual idea, any truly spiritual idea, there's truth, and you know, like everyone has truth, and we just gotta put everything together.
Joe probably knows this better than I do, but like I think there's an idea like tumah is like the end of life, right? Like when you die, there's tamei meis. When a woman becomes a nida,
she's like a life form.
So like tahor is like the life, and then tamei, the opposite of it is really it's just a different like a different manifestation, I guess. Or a secession from...
Of life.
Yeah, of life.
Right, so you're saying...
They're both related to life.
Right. Oh, Kedusha, Mikdash, is Kedusha's life. Right, until we can... Right. So it's all
Am
sort
I
of...
the right track, Joe?
Yeah.
Sorry,
Doc.
I don't know why you get so many mentions.
There, to the degree that the spiritual thoughts enlighten more, the primary ones become more refined and closer to the heart. Until a person reaches through them the highest level of tamimus. after the most unlimited broadening of free thought, and specifically by way of it. The more that we think about things, and the more we think about opposite opinions, which may annoy us because we think we have the truth and we have an opposite opinion, the more we integrate that into our personality, so then it's all one. It's, there's just like this big picture, and it's not like okay, I'm a Litvak and I'm not a Chassid, I'm a Chassid, not a Litvak, that they don't get it and I get it. It's that every type of spirituality, every spiritual idea is part of some like this grand big circle, and you fill it in. It's not like okay, this does it. You know, if I don't get it, I don't get it yet. But it's like and that's really tamimus. Tamimus, you don't look at something that opposes you as challenging you. You look at it as building a bigger picture. And again, it's not like I can learn from this other perspective, but it actually makes my perspective a larger perspective. And the Michtam Eliyahu builds on this. He says, "Ulam klal gadolhu." Rather, here's a great rule: "Kishechazal omrim deos shonos binyonei agada." When Chazal express different opinions in agadic ideas, like non-halachic ideas, "Hare kulan meiros oso nose," they're just brightening, they're just providing light to the same idea. Mitzdadim shonim mibchonot shono, from different sides, from different perspectives. Ve'inam mechlokim, they're not arguing. So he says with agada. The halacha is more complicated. He says with agada, and he says another point. Vehine mefarish b'tikune zohar, and he finds in Zohar the v'inyane agada v'kabbalo shech machlokes. The Zohar says there's no machlokes when it comes to agada, non-ethical, non-legal works and mysticism. There's no machlokes. V'abeir hu kenirli mishum shnei hamabatim emet kol chab b'chinto. Every spiritual idea is true from its own perspective. Ve'ino chaluk lamasa. It's not really arguing. And what's perush plige? Plige, we say it's mufrash v'chaluk. It's not divided. It's another piece. It's another perspective. It's not a real machluk. That's plige. It's just another side to it. The Aruch HaShulchan, this is a halachic work, right? It is an introduction. It says the following. Kol machlokes hatanaim. V'ha amoraim, v'ha gaonim, v'ha poskim. Be'emes, le'mevin davar li'shuro, divrel kimchayim. Every machlokes between rabbis of the Mishnah and the Gemara, and the gaonim and the poskim, each of them, they're the words of the living God. U'le kulam yesh panim b'halacha. And for each of them, they each have a side in halacha. They have a perspective. Adrabba. It's just the opposite. Zot hi tif'eres torasedu hakdoshe v'torah. This is the glory of our holy Torah, the pure Torah. The Chol HaTorah Kula, Nikre Shira. The Torah is called a Shira. What's a Shira? What's Shira?
Song.
Song, or what else could it be? It could also be like poetry, right? It's a poetry, right? So what does it say? At the end of, I think it's Hazinu. It's Hazinu, Hashem says what? I want you to write, but Atem Kisvu as a Shira Hazos. So the Torah is called a Shira. Why is the Torah called a Shira? So the Tziv says it is an introduction because it can be understood about different levels, right? And he says, "Vatiferes hashir." What's the beauty of a shir of a song? Kishah kolos b'shudim zebazeh. When the sounds are different from each other, v'zeh ikar hani'imos. So you have the harmony and you have the melody and I don't know, the octave. I don't know what all these things are, but they're different. They're different scales, right? And they're singing together, right? I mean, I don't know what they are. What are the different ones? The octave and the different.
There
you go. Okay. So you have different scale, right? And everyone's playing a different instrument. Everyone's singing on a different note. And when you get it together, right? You think when you have your one piece that you play and you do really well. But imagine all these different musical instruments played together, or people singing on different notes, right? You think you have the Ebes in your thing, and they have their Ebes, and together it's something really beautiful. It's how Ikar Nibos. Umi shemeshotet b'yama Talmud. If someone swims in the sea of the Talmud, yira ne'imos mishunos b'chol hakolos. He sees different sounds in all of different, you know, music or different in beauty and all different sounds. Mishunos zem izeh. They're different from each other. I'm going to make a, you know, you know, since my daughter, you know, Leora, especially, other girls, Leora learns a lot of Gemara, right? So it's interesting. So one of her teachers was pointing out that, like, you know, the whole idea of women learning Gemara. So she's saying that, it's interesting that a lot of, it's like, she was saying, her teachers were saying that, you know, men who have to teach Gemara to women, because perhaps, I don't know if this is politically correct or not, let's say they come, they have a different, you know, way of thinking, maybe they have different type of emotional intelligence than men or whatever, they're forced to actually understand the Gemara or explain the Gemara in a different way. Not because there's a lesser intelligence that some, they're explaining that some perhaps women have, they have their own perspective when they're coming and learning. So even it's the same, but we all come with different perspectives, right? And different ways of learning something. And that creates this, like, you know, panorama, or this kind of, like, you know, or a rainbow, as they say, or, like, you know, a full, you know, 20-piece, you know, symphony that you're not going to get alone. What you're doing is the truth. But you have different, you know, different types of intelligence, different types of wisdom, different types of perspectives. And what he's saying is it's beautiful how they all come together. It's not merely, you see, it's you have the Ritva, multiple truths. They're all truths, but they're separate truths. And you got, well, they're compatible. One's talking about the beginning and the end, and they have Rav Kook, the union of opposites. The mom is like, they seem opposite. You got the harmony, the melody, they seem opposite, but together, you add one piece, and you see it all fits together. And you know, some of these people, like Rav Kook, were able to do this. He puts together Nigla and Nistar, both mysticism and revealed knowledge. And he, for him, it's everything's the same. He does secular wisdom and mysticism and halacha, and he gets it. Everything's together with him, right? Now, if you look at Rabbi Wiederblick in his book, he writes, Rav Kook uses this model to explain Chazal's statement. Look at this: that Torah scholars marvim shalom ba'olam. Right? How can Torah scholars increase peace? Don't rabbis always fight? So Rabbi Moshe Gottesman, I think he always used to say, because if they fight and they make up, it's like they bring a lot of peace, because they have fights and everybody brings peace. So he says, at first this observation seems troubling, as Torah scholars debate incessantly, endlessly arguing over the minutiae of halacha. Rav Kook explains that we err when we see machlokes as contradicting shalom. In fact, what's shalom? It's not just peace, but what is shalom?
Demand shlemos.
Yeah, what's shlemos? Like completion, like a whole picture, right? So, which can be achieved only when variant perspectives are considered. In other words, shalom is not merely the absence of war. Shalom is what? Is when you're using different parts to create a big picture. Ironically, it is healthy and respectful debate, not uniformity, that promotes true peace. Right? And this is Rav Tamir Granot. I saw this. He wrote a piece on this letter of Rav Kook, The Unity of Opposites, and he says the following: Rav Kook's teachings themselves contain many oppositions between the individual and the collective. Right, they're both true. You know, my own personal rights, right? The goal of the collective, right? You have this a lot, obviously, COVID, you know, between the individual and the collective, obviously, right? So that's obviously very, very, very full of tension. Between the sacred and the secular, what is holy and mundane. Between isolation and sociality. Between prophecy and halacha. From this perspective, the existence of these oppositions does not constitute an eternal contradiction within Rav Kook's thought, but an expression of the fact that perfect unity will be attained specifically through the harmonious coexistence of opposites, not by the nullification of one of them. It's not like I believe in this, most of that, right? You know, I believe in health, and I take COVID. I'm not going to get into the debate, really. But I care about that's what's health versus freedom. So, like, the whole debate is trying to see, so when do you choose, you know, what's the balance between health and freedom? And as you try to find the balance, individual versus the collective, the sacred and the secular. We have a whole secular world out there. So we try to find, we believe in both. We don't nullify one as opposed to the other, but we find some kind of, and they sometimes seem opposite, but we add a little piece. Oh, this applies here, this applies there, and we get a big picture. So we've seen in terms of trying to understand, and as we, You know, this is our introduction to Machshava, to Jewish thought. And as we study different perspectives, and we try to understand how to deal with the different perspectives. So there are different perspectives, how to deal with different perspectives. You have one extreme, we the Ran will say, on the one hand, you know, my way is it. You learn your way, and that's your way. Right? But by the way, if there's a majority, I'm a team player, so I follow the majority. But I learn the other opinion to help sharpen my own view. Right? That's my own view. Right? Then the Ritva, no, I want to learn from everyone. There are multiple to learn from everyone. Right? And let's try to find where they're compatible. And the Rav Kook, which is the broadest thinker. Again, certain things that might be difficult to do, as Yossi pointed out. Rav Kook, the broadest thinker, that sometimes things can be so opposite each other. But if it's out there, if it's a spiritual idea that's out there, obviously who's entitled to an opinion is probably its own question, right? Maybe some people are not entitled to opinion. That's a question. Now, there's certain opinions will probably force you to sharpen your own thinking. Like I think Rav Kook, I believe, that he writes elsewhere, that if like even an atheistic view comes from some kind of yearning and it forces you to refine your own thinking. So I'm not sure if he's going to say that, you know, like he said, there's value to atheism in that it helps you refine your own thinking of why you even believe in what you believe. So obviously that requires you to sharpen your own, you know, to sharpen your own thinking. But, so I don't know if every opinion, but any kind of legitimate spiritual view, we could debate what that is, he says, you're trying to get a bigger picture. You're trying to like, get a good worldview. We should try. That's what I try to do. I try to learn some things I don't understand. There are many things in life I don't understand. There are many ideas that I have difficulty in. I try to add to my own personal view. But I look at, you know, when I look at like an idea, I have like my own, you know, worldview of how I see life through religion, relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu, my role in this world. And I try to keep on adding pieces. Some are in Nigla, some are in Nistar, you know, most are from the Torah. Maybe I'll find a secular idea that resonates, that's connected with something. Maybe I'll find something that's a mystical idea that resonates and fits in. But it's all a big picture. And you look at them in isolation, they seem to be opposite. But sometimes you think a little bit harder and you find how they fit into one big picture. And we should constantly try to learn and try to look at different ideas in that manner. Okay.
Different